episode 62 of the Sales Quants podcast, a production of Madison, Michigan, and Market. This is not Harry Stebbings. It's Jeff Herman, and we are really thrilled to be here with you today. And today we have a great show. We're going to focus on content's role in driving sales productivity. And our special guest is Harry Hayward from Curata. Hey, Harry, how are you?
Doing well, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me on today. I'm very excited.
Hey, I'm thrilled you're here. I mean, look, some of you may remember, for those of you that have listened to the podcast for quite some time, Harry was the star. In fact, Harry and his dog, Lily, were the star of episode 30 about a year ago, right? So we're on our one-year anniversary, Harry. Do you feel special?
I absolutely do. Time flies when you're having fun. I guess that happens.
I feel like I've known you for longer than that, though. Probably like that's 5 years, oddly enough.
I honestly agree. It's just because you're such a charismatic guy and, you know, two good people get together, it's like an eternity. Like, hey, we never skip a beat.
There you go. Right. So Harry's had a really interesting career. He's started off when I met him, he was an SDR making cold calls, and he's really evolved into a leading marketer with Curata. And so the goal today is, Harry, we'd love to, you know, could you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us about Lily, how she's doing, or he, right? No, it has to be a she.
Yeah, it's a she.
And then what you've been up to the past year.
Yeah, for sure. My name is Harry. I work in the marketing department at Curata. You've heard a bit about my dog, Lily. She's a half black lab, half golden. She's not moundy, but she's stout. She's doing very well at home, probably chewing on a tennis ball or sleeping in getting sun-kissed by some sun through the window. I started at Curata, came here from an account executive role at another company for the same role at Curata. And I started during a time at Curata when we were looking to grow a customer base for a new product that was launching, and it was a bit more, I don't know if I would say stickier, but it had a different value, but definitely related to our initial offering, the curation software. And we were having a bit of a challenge creating awareness and kind of buzz around it, and, you know, subsequently opportunities for the product. But during my time as an AE closing business, I was surfacing really great opportunities outside the scope of our marketing efforts. So just outbound prospecting. And my boss at the time, Randy Pants Bernard, recognized that. And because we needed to kind of develop more, conversations, evaluations, and opportunities for our new product, and that was just a need for the company, he kind of respectfully offered me an opportunity to do just that, surface opportunities and essentially a business development role. Everything kind of made sense the way he propositioned it, and we had an agreement and made sense for both sides. So I obliged, and that is kind of how the outbound engine at Curata was born, and it's operating at a larger scale today.
That's great. Well, and Harry, I have to say, and this goes back to how we first met, you probably in the history of sales prospecting emails, and I'm going to challenge everyone listening to send me your feedback, but in my experience of years of being on the receiving end and sending end of sales prospecting emails, I feel like you have sent the most effective and most creative sales prospecting email I've ever seen, ever. And you, I'm sure, you know, you got me to a meeting. So could you share, you know, how you've used that approach to break the ice and kind of some background behind it?
Yeah, totally. So you've already got the intro of my dog. So what we were coming up on was the Marketo Summit. While this wasn't exactly a true kind of one-to-one prospecting experience, the purpose was the same. It's just kind of to generate interest and buzz and awareness for the company at the event. But I took a different angle with it, really. I kind of created this email, a play on Marketo, with my dog and Barketo, kind of spare the details there, but it's kind of funny. It generated a laugh out of a lot of folks, but I got them to drive them to my personal LinkedIn profile to get a picture of me and my dog. So I'm not driving them to Curata branded property or another site. It's just kind of me one-to-one, because that's what I wanted at these events. It's a perfect opportunity to get FaceTime with people that you know, you're at an event that matters, your audience is relevant. So it's to people that matter to you in your business. So kind of get that level of personal introduction on who I am, what I do, and why I want to chat with you. So, you know, the idea here was just come up with something clever, somewhat funny, but just kind of separate myself with creativity and then kind of speak to an area that I think is important to the Marketo Summit audience.
Right. Well, and so you really, truly, you build an emotional connection. I mean, was that your goal? It sounds like that's your goal, right? How do you evolve beyond this person pushing email? And as we know, look, an email shows up in your inbox. It's a bunch of black letters or blue letters. There's no differentiation. But your subject line and your link to your LinkedIn profile, which you have a non-traditional LinkedIn profile, right? You're not like the guy wearing like the cool shirt and, you know, you're chilling with your dog. So how did that building that emotional connection really help differentiate yourself?
Yeah. First of all, it's just different. You know, I don't know if it's, I'm not really sure. You might have a certain number of named accounts out of a contact list for an event that you really want to target. And you might invest a little bit of time in making sure that you kind of make a connection there. We weren't doing that. So what I did was essentially kind of try to make it so that I'm separating myself and people want to come talk to me specifically. And honestly, it sounds maybe somewhat selfish and self-serving, but at the end of the day, that's what I wanted was people to come by and say, where's Harry? I want to talk to him. And I came prepared to that event looking to talk to people. I did, you know, it might be hard to believe, but I actually did do pretty good amount of research and understanding is what we had target accounts at the event, or we had a kind of a demographic, a firmographic fit of the folks we want to have as customers and that would be successful. I did a lot of research on an individual level of what companies are there, who's there. And this is going to sound even crazier. I put together like what I call Facebooks for the event. So I would say Jeff Leo Herman is going to be at the Marketo Summit. This is what he looks like. This is what his role is. This is what his company does. This is something that he's done recently. And so I'll have, you know, 10 or 15 pages of Facebooks of folks that I could stop and talk to and make it a conversation that's memorable for them. And maybe they'll walk away with something that is memorable as well.
Wow. That's amazing. That's such a great idea. And so would you say the time you invested, and that sounds like a tremendous amount of time, but would you rather invest a lot of time really trying to build relationships with a few folks, right? Or a lot of time trying to build relationships with hundreds of folks, right? And what's more, it comes down to conversion rate, right? So where do you think you'll have the better conversion?
That's a really good question, and I think that's going to be one that's debated until the end of time. What's the most scalable way to deploy for, you know, a quality engine? Personally, I think I'm with the 80-20 group, and I spend most of my time really investing in people that a smaller group of people that's really going to make – that I can make a difference with versus – you know, gripping and ripping and like a larger audience where I might have an opportunity at a lower conversion rate.
Right, right. Now that makes sense. Would you say to this day, you know, like you said, you know, the engine at Curata is humming along. Is it still a highly customized approach, or are there appropriate times to do the kind of the broader volumetric outreach? It all depends, right? It's all based upon the goals and what you're trying to really accomplish at the time.
Yeah, definitely. So we have an in and outbound, as we call it, strategy. We're kind of rebalancing it right now, but I think it kind of depends. It's shifting a lot. So because we are operating a account-based marketing methodology, it does take a lot of you know, tailored communication, tailored messaging, tailored content to move the needle and pique interest for folks. So it's an interesting question. I think that for just general inbound activities, you'll never have the bandwidth to come up with like hyper relevant messaging for all your AQLs. But as far as anecdotally at our company, I'm really high on the you know, attention to detail, hammering, you know, focusing on things that matter and being very relevant on a lower volume.
What's an AQL, Harry? I have not heard that before.
An automated qualified lead.
Okay. Automated qualified lead. So is that effectively like an inbound lead or?
Yeah, just an inbound lead, really.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like with an account-based marketing strategy, is content really the foundation of an account-based marketing strategy? And how much of that is standardized versus how much of that is customized? What's that ratio there?
Yeah. I am a firm believer, and I think a lot of people are, that content's really the backbone of all marketing activities and functions, you know, not all, but most. And so I think that, you know, if we could live in a world where all we had was personalized content by role, by function, by interest, by industry, that would be perfect. And but I don't think that is like the catch-all solution, nor is it really a reasonable solution because of the amount of legwork that would go into that sort of thing. And there's, you know, I just don't think that every team has the bandwidth or budget to create that type of strategy. So, you know, what we do is, you know, we are serving the best content we can to our audience and the segments within them to help try to capture their interests. And we're not expecting, just like, you know, content, the whole premise of content marketing, we're kind of, even with our prospects, we're building value with them in many cases. And when that point that they're ready to take action, we've provided enough value from their standpoint that they're going to, you know, think of Curata for that next, you know, relevant project.
Right. So that's interesting. I mean, we're talking to our friend Charlie Liang from Engageo, and they spend a lot of time writing what they call epics, right? The epic guide to account-based marketing, the epic guide, you know, it started with John Miller, the epic guide to lead generation, inbound marketing, marketing automation, you name it. They created an epic guide. Like, they churned out lots of epic guides at Marketo. So do you guys take an epic guide approach or more of kind of a theme with a lot of episodic type of content in a series?
So yeah, we do. Like, we have a whole library of, you know, how-to guides, practitioner things you can really take and implement into your marketing efforts. But then additionally, we kind of atomize those as well into that more regular and more lightweight content. But for sure, those are some of the best pieces of collateral that, as a marketer myself, that I'm looking for. I really want, you know, it's nice to get, you know, thought leadership stuff, you know, inspiring content, things that will help you kind of with your day-to-day stuff. But also, I'm always on the hunt for like a piece of content that I can take and then immediately take the framework from that content and apply it to my role as a practitioner, because I'm executing social video stuff all the time. So I'm looking for things I can walk away from and say, wow, that's a great idea. I want to do that myself and check the results.
Right. So how do you tell when a piece of content's been effective? Like, what pops for you? Is it the analytics? Is it the lead volume? Like, what do you really use to determine the effectiveness of a piece of content and driving those conversations?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. So we're fortunate enough, we have some technology in place that we're like measuring pretty much every imaginable dynamic of our content strategy and how it's influencing every part of the funnel. So revenue from a blog post, you know, engagement metrics from an ebook, whatever. And we use those to kind of determine what we should be promoting and where. That's really helpful. In terms of sales, you know, I like to think about it, you know, what is influencing really like revenue, because, you know, and then looking back. So we'll get a piece of content that's helped contribute to bringing in company revenue, and then we'll do a pathway to purchase saying this piece of content, it started at, you know, going from the revenue backwards. We'll look at what the journey was for that piece of content and then try to replicate that, I think.
Okay. And so that being said, there's you mentioned the keyword video that often tends to resonate. So I know you're spending a fair amount of time on video these days, and is that maybe, are you doing that because it's new and there's a lot of noise and, you know, around the topic, or have you seen video being very impactful and effective in your content strategy?
Yeah, it definitely is. So I think at a sales level, I would, if I had, if I was in a role leading a sales team or had more influence there, I would 100% be convincing and, I don't know about forcing, but really encouraging those folks to use personalized video and video outreach, video prospecting as a kind of a vehicle to get in the minds of your audience. I think that's incredibly creative. I've done it as a marketer to drive attendance for conference attendees to use our discount codes at a personal level because, we were at a conference in Scottsdale. I reached out to a handful of local companies that we would want as a company to be at the event. And I said, I sent a personalized whiteboard video, as you might have seen. People hold up the whiteboard with their prospect's name and maybe a kind of a quote on there, something like that. I reached out to folks saying, hey, my name's Harry from Curata Marketing. We have Curata passes free to a local event that's very relevant to you. We think it'd be valuable for you. Definitely get out there and use this pass if you feel inclined. No. That was successful.
Now, is that the one where you're wearing the wig?
Nah, that's another one. That's just a general, very lightweight video to get people to laugh and hopefully improve conversion rates, which videos are proven to do. So
right. We
are looking to do more of them. And then, I think that beyond that personalized video bit, I'm always looking at a couple companies, Vidyard and Wistia. They create great content. I watch those and have, those are working their sales magic on me as a marketer. So I'm convinced wholeheartedly that video's effective. I create those lightweight, funny videos. I don't know if I can call them funny because I created them, but maybe
authentic.
The audience.
They're authentic.
Yeah, they're scrappy. I try to make them fun and maybe get a laugh out of folks, which, like I said, might help the Curata brand resonate with them or convert on something.
And that you have to be fearless to some extent and you have to be bold. But look, if what's the key word? Scrappy, authentic. You're being a little vulnerable, right? You wore a wig. I think you wore the wig, or was it? I don't know. The other person. So you're putting yourself out there, but it's memorable. It's personal. You're building an emotional connection. And I applaud you for that, because once again, these kind of robotic people that just go through the motions and just try to, there's nothing personal about it. That's not where we're heading today. This is really, and all the companies you've mentioned, anyone taking that more personalized approach and that, to make that emotional connection has really come across and been seen as very successful.
Totally.
Yeah, that, I don't know, that's interesting. The Vidyard, do you use Vudit?
So we have access to Vudit, and I think there's like a handful of alternative tools out there that are available that might be another tool. I don't know if Vudit's free or not. I have personally used it to do that outreach that I've made mention of regarding the B2B C2C conference. I've encouraged our customer success team, or at least gauge their interest in using that to engage folks for their quarterly business reviews, our sales team for using it for prospecting, or at least putting a face to a name or a face to an email, so they really know it's not spam. I like to play outdo our audience in the game they play. When they receive an email from Curata, they're probably thinking to themselves, is this spam or not? With video, I think that you have the ability to kind of flip the script there, because you're playing our game, which is this relevant, or is this relevant and helping me discover something new? So we're eliminating the the variable in their mind that our messaging to them might be spam.
Right. No, that's good. I mean, and I've used Vudit quite a bit recently. It is free. It's a Chrome extension, and it's very effective. I mean, it's dead simple. I record the desktop while I'm doing it. I typically have a PowerPoint or something, very specific in the background, and it's amazing. And I even use it for internal communications as well. Just if you have a team that you're working with, across several locations, nothing better than a quick little video sailing across the inbox, especially on a Friday afternoon. You can do a little dance music. Like, Harry, do you want a boogie for a sec?
A boogie.
All right. A little dance break's good for everybody.
Always is. So good for the heart, it's good for the soul.
That's right. This is a great way to transition. So, it sounds like content's been highly effective. You're investing a lot in video. And once again, personalizing that outreach and just not being afraid to establish that connection pays lots of dividends. So what are you reading or listening to these days? So how are you sharpening your craft, sharpening your skills?
Yeah, so I'm in a position where I've been in the marketing role since, I guess, October. And so I'm still very much learning. I think everyone, if you want to be, great, and I'm not saying I'm great, but if you want to be great, you have to always be just a student of life and always like just consuming information. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm always digging into, how-to guides. So like that epic guide, the sophisticated guide that LinkedIn produces, those sort of pieces of content are what moves the needle. I think it's important for me to kind of balance my own curriculum, because sometimes I can get spread pretty thin. You know, I'm still trying to work out understanding and maximizing Google Analytics, which is probably an overstatement. I'm more like in the walk crawl steps there. But, social media strategy is another one that we're looking to improve that I've kind of absorbed as well. So anything that my marketing team is empowering me to take on and kind of challenging me and providing me an opportunity, I'm doing my damnedest to make sure that I've found the absolute best resource on that subject matter, the folks that kind of produce it, and I'm staying close to them. So I liked, I don't know if I mentioned it, but Wistia is a really, really strong one. They produce some amazing how-to content for video. Vidyard is in kind of the same boat. I think BuzzSumo produces really, really cool content that is based on original data-backed content and research-based content. For me, is the one, really the only time, other than most of the time, it's kind of the only content I'd share with my colleagues internally, saying, hey, check this out. Really neat. Can we do something like this? Or, did you walk away with something like I did?
No, that's great. So what advice would you give to someone, say if they are in an inside sales or a business development role and they want to make a transition to marketing? What advice would you give? What skill sets do they need? Is it possible to do? Are you just this unique individual that did this, that made the leap, or how would you go about that?
So I think I actually was in a fortunate position where I was already at Curata for an extended period of time, and we're only, I think I was around the 18 to 20 person mark, and we've grown up to be 40 to 45. It's a really tight environment, and with the, sales and marketing has been married closer than ever before. In, it's certainly from my seat, we have regular sales and marketing meetings. There's just a ton of exposure from one side to the other. And I think that with the advent of these new marketing methodologies, I don't know if ABM is new, but this is, in this case, that's kind of what did it for us. We are working hip to hip on things. So I have a ton of, as a salesperson at the time, I had a ton of hands-on experience with the marketing functions. And while I've come to learn, it's a lot easier said than done. It's been super helpful working in a small, tight-knit environment where these two teams are working hand in hand like never before. So that was really – that's something I had on my side. Additionally, having the domain experience of being in content for a bit was super helpful. That was like one area that, was something that interests me. I finally found something I'm passionate about in marketing technology. Content is content marketing software is in there too. So being genuinely interested in it. Going to these trade shows was also super, super helpful because, when you work at – I'm working at a content marketing company as a salesperson, you lose sight of that – the fact that there is way more in a marketing engine than just content. And so, when you get out to these trade shows where, you and I met, you have a killer opportunity to talk with other vendors and understand not just their product but what functions and what they're helping other businesses with, and then you piece that together with what you do, you get a pretty good holistic view on what it's like for a marketer and what their challenges are.
No, that's cool. That's great. That's great. The last question is pertaining to LinkedIn. Have you seen your engagement dip over the last few months after these algorithm changes? Do you still like the platform?
That's a really good question, and it's compounded by the fact that I'm not even in sales anymore, so I spend less time using it for what it is, as far as I'm concerned, which is just a world-class sales tool. It's the best it gets, and I refuse to believe. And there's salespeople have the luxury of some pretty amazing technology like SalesLoft and the sales automation tools and the data tools. Shout out to Cynthia. Products that I didn't have I was initially getting started as a salesperson. Do I like LinkedIn? Yeah, it's still terrific. If you know how to use it, some incredible capabilities in there. Apparently, LinkedIn engagement's up. So like up to 40% in this year. So up 40% this year. So it's promising knowing that it's another opportunity to get content out there, get eyeballs on it. That's mm-hmm. kind of from a marketing perspective and a sales perspective. So we have an employee advocacy program that we are running, and I'm optimistic that with the growth and engagement on the LinkedIn feeds that we'll start seeing better results in terms of our employee advocacy program. But as the algorithm changes, it's tough to say. So like I always kept a good eye on my social selling index. I think there's a way to find it, linkedin.com, your profile name, then /SSI. Mm-hmm. That's gone down because I'm not in the tool and like working with prospects or trying to get attention, that sort of thing, as much anymore. Now I'm just kind of in there for professional networking. But I think there's a ton of value there. My advice was to be to go in there and understand Sales Navigator. That's probably the most valuable thing I've ever gotten out of LinkedIn. And recommendation is to get to know or follow a guy named Gabe Villa.
Gabe Benamazar.
Yeah.
From Lucid Software.
Yep, so. Lucid. That guy has a ton of like crazy valuable tools for salespeople, or you know, content for salespeople to learn how to use it. He's done an amazing job himself. Gabe, I'd love to meet, like, chat with you one day just to say hi. And that's kind of my advice there.
Yeah, no, Gabe's a super good guy. He's a friend of a friend, and I'm gonna actually, he's slated on my short list for podcast guests. So hopefully we'll get to talk to him here at some point in the very near future. But I agree, good guy, totally. And he wears a hat too.
Yeah, he has some good stuff.
So, just tell us where we can find you on social and a little bit about Curata and kind of what you guys are up to this summer.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of manage our company's social media. Would love to get folks to follow us on all our – and basically on our Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. That's a good place to hear the voice of Curata, which I'm behind. But additionally, you can find me on those same channels on a personal, professional level. You might see me. We kind of talked about it in some of those videos. I'm enjoying in-house video production in my journey and learning that. Something I've never even – you know, I've hardly taken iPhone camera pictures, let alone made business grade, you can't see the quotation, videos for a B2B company. So I'm learning, if you guys want to give me feedback on those as you see them.
Yeah. You know, I have to ask this last question. How do you get a B2B brand to stand out on social? Does the brand itself, is there an affinity for the brand, or do you try to personify that brand?
I would say that you need to find a balance of both. People trust people more than they trust brands. So right. You'd be surprising kind of like the ratio to content published through our employee advocacy program to our social. It's surprising how much the engagement levels you'll find between the two. So like people just like getting content from other marketers or salespeople that publish it out. If it's interesting from coming from a person, they're more likely to click on it coming from a brand. I think you do need to humanize things. Don't be such a stiff. I think people lose sight of the fact that humanizes is good. Like in that email I sent to you, I had typos. I don't know if that necessarily helped my conversion rate per se, but it let people know. And you even said yourself that you snickered at those typos. I'm not saying you need to type out, bad grammar in your tweets or your LinkedIn posts, but definitely you want to keep a humanized voice, keep things lightweight and make it about them. It's oftentimes people are focusing. I think I am struggling with this right now. I'm trying to make it a better experience and stay more competitive with some of our competitors' social channels. So I think it is about humanizing and making sure that your audience know that there's a person behind that social voice.
Right. That's great. It's great advice, Harry. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed your time here. Thanks for joining the podcast. And any last words of advice or any follows you want people to encourage? Any Twitter handles you want to share?
I'd love folks to come check out Curata. I'm at Haroldinho, kind of a play on the old soccer player. That's mostly chatter about marketing and hockey, to be entirely honest with you, and some coaching stuff in there. But beyond that, definitely seek out Curata and help support the kid behind the social channels.
Yeah, the kid.
That's about all I got for you.
All right, good deal, Harry. Hey, thanks for your time today. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jeff. Really
talk
appreciate
soon.
It, man.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show today. And before we close out, I'd love to thank our episode sponsor. This episode was sponsored by Effective Spend. They're a leading digital advertising agency from Austin, Texas, where they truly deliver better best practices. The team of Brian and Alex, they're true practitioners. They grew up on the client side. They're extremely analytical, and they believe in closed-loop marketing. And look, these guys really crush it when it comes to Google pay-per-click and Facebook ads. So I'd encourage you to visit effectivespend.com and let them know that your friends from the Sales Quants podcast sent you there. So thanks again for your time. Please, if you want the most effective chart tracking sales team productivity, please visit us at salesquants.com in the contact us section, and we will send you this chart, which truly is the most effective way to track sales team productivity. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a great day. Cheers.